stone was formed. And this is the image that we have upon the overhead as such as we have. And I wanted to suggest to you, I don't think we made this point, that can you imagine the pomp and the circumstance? This wasn't getting dressed like I got dressed this morning. And we don't want to talk about how I got dressed. It's slinging stuff on, forgetting to look in the mirror, got the wrong socks matched up. These were people that were around, that Moses took them before the congregation. And I imagine a coronation. Have you thought about it that way? That this was the assignment of God's mediator. And Moses being the lawgiver, for all time known as the lawgiver, and he is dressing the man that is going to be the righteousness before Jehovah, the only one that can go into the most holy place one time a year. I don't think this was a casual thing. It follows upon it, and I don't think we made much of it, but as the furnishings were brought into the tabernacle, do you think everybody just said, everybody's scrambling around and everything's going everywhere and they're yelling at each other and I hope you got the sockets laid because we got some posts coming in and the curtains are coming, we got to be ready. I tell you what, and I have no evidence of this, I wanted to paint a picture for you that this was a solemn, sober, holy thing, that priests would come in and hours or days, months were spent with assignments being made, and the people that crafted them, that, you know, when you grab this post, I mean, it's going to be in the ring, and it's going to be heavy, and you need to time your steps, and you walk, because this curtain is not that wide. I don't know what all the conversation was, but I think this was special. This was a special event, and it was solemn. I think about the walking around Jericho, where the armies, and the priests, and the trumpets, and not a sound was to be made. I see that type of event here, whether it was or not. I want you to understand that this was a special, special circumstance, that God's house was being created, and that Aaron and his sons were washed. The people watched from a distance, and they saw this come together, and he would have had everything in exactly the right place. And he would have stood before Moses, and Moses would have dressed him. Are you seeing what I'm picturing here? This was a holy, holy event. We mentioned it, Scott mentioned it on down in verse 23 of chapter 8, that as up in the earlier verses there were offerings that were offered to sanctify Aaron and his sons, and all of this again is being done by Moses to them to exchange the leadership role of the religious rites that were going to be served that Moses had always done. And when they get down to the end of or the middle of chapter 8 in verse 22, and he brought the other ram, the ram of consecration, and Aaron and his sons laid their hands on the head of this ram, and he slew it. And Moses took of the blood of it, and he put upon the tip of Aaron's right ear, and upon the thumb of his right hand, and upon the great toe of his right foot, the blood of that sacrificial lamb. And then he did likewise to Aaron. And we mentioned that, and then we went on that this was, as we understand it, was Aaron was being dedicated with the blood of atonement to purify him in God's sight. His hearing, his communication, that was to be blessed, it was to be atoned for, it was to be consecrated in the presence of God, that sacrificial blood was applied to his right ear. It was then applied to his hand. Of all the deeds and everything that he was responsible for, his hands were, his doings, his work, his effort, everything was symbolized by the blood that was put on his hands and then on his feet, of the great toe of his right foot. And he was consecrated, that this too would have been done with pomp and with circumstance. And I wanted you to think about that we raced through that, and this was a special, special event. Aaron's sons were anointed. I have an outline of a lesson I've never taught, but it occurred to me even during this study that here we have Aaron being this significant character, this figure at the beginning of the chosen generation, the chosen people of God, and Aaron is the man. He is the man that stands before God. And God selected him, appointed him, and for 40 years, 38 years, some period of time, he is going to be God's liaison to these people. And he was a pretty flawed guy. Have you thought about that? I mean, this is the guy that when Moses was gone for a few minutes, he's having what some accounts say was an orgy at the foot of the mountain. There was drinking, there was reveling, and he was like, what was I going to do? I mean, you know, I mean, they wanted to do it, and what was I to say to them? I mean, I didn't know if you were coming back. And this is the leader of 2.2 million people that was the second in command. We're going to see, I don't know if we see in this study, that here shortly that he and his sister aren't going to be real crazy about the lawgiver and Moses' decisions. Do you remember that? That the rebellion, the insurrection? That this, now, this is after this, all of this, and his hands are consecrated, his feet are consecrated. He's second in command, and he's going to rebel against Moses. And I thought about that lesson. I don't know if I'll ever preach it or not, but you know, that encourages me to say that God has people in charge, and God anoints people, and people are God's chosen, and they don't behave very well sometimes. But God let him reign for 38 more years, didn't he? I might make it. I hadn't created a distraction. I hadn't formed an orgy. I hadn't led people, God's people astray. I mean, I haven't done those kind of things. I'm trying to do the right thing, and God stood by Aaron. You know, that's encouraging to know that these characters that we study and we think about how important a role they had in an entire religion, and they were just like you and I. They were just fallible men. And that's encouraging to me, and I wanted to point that out. As all of this goes on with Aaron and his sons, and in some sense, Aaron's sons were anointed, as was Aaron was. Bob goes into some length about the pouring on of the oil, the special formulation of the oil, what oil was used. But all of these things were cared for with such meticulous measure that it was to be done exactly the way God told them to. And Aaron's sons were anointed in some way, and it may not have been poured over their head, because it seems as though that type of anointing was for two titles of people. Anybody tell me who was anointed? Who was the anointed of God? Kings and high priest. And it was high priest. It wasn't the priest. Again, if this thought process is right, all of the priest, if you will, the everyday attendants of the tabernacle, they were anointed and they were blessed, and things were done and sacrifices were offered. But this was something that was very, very special for only two groups of people: the kings of Israel that don't exist yet, and the high priest that we see the anointing here. Turn to Zechariah chapter 4, last book in the New Testament, Zechariah chapter 4. And I want to make a point here of the significance of this, that only two people had this happen, and it was important. It was carefully done. And these people that had this done to them were numero uno. They were the head man before the people. And as you read Zechariah chapter 4, to Zechariah in verse 1, "And the angel that talked with me came again and waked me, as a man that is wakened out of a deep sleep, and said unto me, What seest thou? And I said, I have looked, and behold, a candlestick of all gold, with a bowl upon the top of it, and seven stamps thereon, and seven pipes to the seven lamps." And these are drains. These are gold pipes that would come out and feed the lamps that are on this candlestick, that were on the top thereof. And in verse 3, "And the two olive trees by it, one on one side, and one on the other side of the bowl that would hold the oil and would feed these lamps, and the other on the left side. So I answered and spake unto the angel and talked with me, saying, What are these, my Lord? And the angel that talked with me answered and said, Knowest thou not what these be? And I said, No, I don't know, Lord. Then he answered and spake unto me, saying, This is the word of the Lord unto Zerubbabel, saying, Not by might nor by power, but by my spirit, saith the Lord of hosts. Well, who art thou, O great mountain? Before Zerubbabel thou shalt become a plain, and he shall bring from the headstone thereof with shoutings, crying, Grace, grace unto thee. And this was speaking in every aspect right here about Christ coming, and that nothing would be able to stand before the one that was coming. That mountains would be leveled in verse 7 before him, and become mountains would become as plains. Moreover, the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, In the hands of Zerubbabel have laid the foundation of this house, and his hands shall also finish it, and thou shalt know that the Lord of hosts has sent me unto you. For who hath despised the day of the small things? For they shall rejoice and see the plummet of the hand of Zerubbabel with those seven. They are the eyes of the Lord, which run to and fro through the whole earth. You're being watched. Everything will be seen in his eyes. In verse 11, Then answered I unto him and said, What are these two olive trees upon the right side of the candlestick and upon the left side of the candlestick? And again I answered him, What be these two olive branches which are with the two golden pipes empty and golden oil out of themselves into the bowl? And he answered and said unto me, Knowest not what these be? And I said, No, I don't, Lord. And he said, These are the two anointed ones that stand by the Lord of the whole earth. And these olive trees that were mounted onto this bowl, and the lamps were lit with seven pipes out of them, and it would flicker against this gold image that he was seeing in the vision. He said, What are these two olive trees? And they were the only person represented in two elements that would be anointed. We know who those were? It was the King. It was the Messiah. It was the Anointed One. It was the Christ. That all through time, this event that we talked about this morning and everything that's been done to take care of every detail of his dress, of his not having to button a button, but he was taken care of and he was straightened and he was made ready for presentation before the people, that this is Christ. For the very first time in our presence, before us this morning, this Christ that's presented for us is the only one that embodied those two rituals and was worthy to be both king and high priest. And those are the lessons as we go through Exodus, we finish this study, never to lose sight of the shadowing of what we're to enjoy and appreciate and respect. What Jesus did for us, these people saw something physical and were impressed as the throngs of people surrounded this tabernacle and watched this pomp and circumstance. We, through our mind's eye in the letter of Revelation, we see what John saw. Those are the images that we want to capture and realize what a special, special God, what Christ did for us, and how glorious He really is. We have just a taste of it here in these writings. Turn to Exodus chapter 29. Having dressed Aaron, having dressed his sons, and created this spectacle of splendor before these people. After all of this was done, and it was done exactly the way God wanted it. Chapter 29 and verse 42, And this shall be a continual burnt offering through your generations at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation before the Lord, where I will meet you to speak there unto you. And there I will meet with the children of Israel, and the tabernacle shall be sanctified by my glory. And I will sanctify the tabernacle of the congregation and the altar, and I will sanctify also Aaron and his sons for the minister to be in the priest's office. And I will dwell among the children of Israel, and I will be their God. And they shall know that I am the Lord their God that brought them forth out of the land of Egypt, that I may dwell among them. I am the Lord their God. We're going to study something here, hopefully, in just a minute. I want to get through a few things that we kind of touched upon. But this presence of God that He's finally, I think we talked about Wednesday night, that when He entered the tabernacle, what was Moses' reaction when He entered? Anybody remember? Didn't He have to leave? Didn't he have to leave that the glory was so great? Now, this was Moses that had been on top of the mountain and the thunderings and the lightnings and the earthquakes and all these kind of things. But when God's presence came into this small cubicle, Moses could not bear to be there. That God is coming and making it clear to all the observers that you've done everything I've asked you to do now. We've recovered from the moments that you had some weeks ago, and we've made all these, and you've given so much that we had to make you stop. You gave so much gold and silver that you've atoned for your sins. Your attitude is right. You've done everything the way I asked you to do it, and I'm going to come and be among you. And in chapter 9 of Leviticus here in just a few minutes, we're going to see another expression of that and how special that was. Exactly, yeah. Again, one time a year was the only time he could be in there. This something else we talked about Wednesday night where we had so much ground to cover, but we had how many princes brought their offerings for the tribes? 12. I mean, there were 12 princes brought. We talked about the wagons and all the things that they brought. And among these gold and silver and the massive amounts of this kind of stuff, I don't know how clearly we made the point that they brought sacrifices, and there were so many of them, and there was so much of it that each one had an assigned day. And the things that we just talked about that happened with Aaron and his sons, and the sin offering that's going to be offered in verses 14 through 17 of Leviticus chapter 8. Leviticus chapter 8 is a review, a different wording of what we saw in Exodus chapter 29, that all of these things are happening over days. This is not something that, okay, be here at 9 o'clock on Sunday morning, we're going to have a service, we'll wrap this thing up, we'll have the tabernacle ready, and we're ready to move on. The promised land's waiting on us. This was hours and hours and hours and days and days, and the movement in and out of this tabernacle and the coming and the going and the delivering of these sacrifices. And something we talked about a couple of weeks ago that Angela Wisdom brought up about, how did they keep those, how do they keep all this clean? You see a lot of washing going on. And I mentioned this back several weeks ago, but I've thought about it since that I didn't ask for a raise of hands of how many hog killings y'all have been to. I worked in a meatpacking factory, but I want to tell you, when these vestments and what they had on, you slit the throat of a bull, and you don't get a little dribble drool, little blood that trickles down. It's more like a 5 or a 10 gallon bucket. I mean, a 5 gallon bucket is the only size something that I can. In my own mind, visualize dumping out blood, but when you slit that throat and that heart is pounding and that animal is all excited and he's in the middle of an uncomfortable situation, the blood gushes out. It is gallons and gallons of blood. I'm not sure he stayed clean. I'm not sure that there was an effort to stay clean. I think this was a bloody sacrifice of a price that was made that people were to see an image of ugliness. And it wasn't ugly to them. It was different. It would probably make me scream or whatever. But it was different for them. They were more used to that. They killed their supper. They killed a goat and broiled it and did those. So it was different for them. But there was lots of blood. And it got on those vestures and those clothes. He was alive when he slit that throat. The bullock was alive. And I'm of the mind that it got all over everywhere. And when we sing these songs that his... and now I've lost my songs, but his clothes are white as snow, the crimson blood that stained. Those kind of things were meant to bring back images of this wonderful figure, totally in white. And all of Aaron's sons, the other, they were in white, and that blood was everywhere. They came in order and file and somber in unison, clean and pure, and they got bloody crimson red. That's the image that we need to not lose sight of. What was the first thing that they had to do in verses 14 through 17 after Aaron was washed by Moses, after he was dressed? What was the first thing that they had to do to Aaron and his sons? 14 through 17, an offering had to be made, didn't it? They had to be atoned for first in verses 14 through 17. In 18 through 21, then a sacrifice that was offered for the people. And the people would have been dedicated at this event. And in verses 22 through 32, a ram of consecration, which was a peace offering. Burnt offerings, what happened to those offerings? Totally burned. The third offering in the verses 22 through 32 was a peace offering. What happened to that meat? It was burned, and then portions of it were eaten by the priest. And some of the, in various passages, and we could read and read and read about certain parts of the animal were taken, and they were taken outside the camp because they were not for, for whatever reason, God had not made them a part of the sacrifice, but they would be taken out. But everything had a design, everything had a purpose, everything was to be done a certain way. And the washing of Aaron and his sons, and the blood sacrifices that were offered on their behalf and on the behalf of the people in verses 14 through 32 of Leviticus chapter 8, is probably what is referred to in, and let's just turn to it, it won't take a second, Hebrews chapter 10, is probably what the Hebrew writer is referring to in Hebrews chapter 10 when it talks about the washing and the sprinkling. That these Hebrew people that longed back for the days of Solomon's temple, and to see these things on maybe even a more grand scale, certainly a larger scale, that they would see these events and this blood being washed, and they would watch from the courtyards as the high priest would go up and he would be bathed by people, treated like a king. Not just treated by a king, but the necessity that he be washed and he be pure and clean in God's sight. In Hebrews chapter 10, verse 22, or verse 20, let's start in 20. By a new and living way which he hath consecrated for us through the veil, that is to say his flesh, and having a high priest over the house of God, let us draw near with a true heart and full assurance of faith. And this is what's to happen to us. Having our hearts sprinkled from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water, let us hold fast the profession of our faith without wavering, for he is faithful and promised, and let us consider one another to provoke one another to love and good works, that we are sprinkled, not by that blood that gushed out in a 5-gallon pail, not that bullock that was hung on those meat steaks and cut and roasted over that burnt offering altar, but Aaron's sons, where they were not anointed, they came up and there was blood and oil that was smeared on them. And what was done for us was that blood, that anointing by Jesus Christ. And our washing was a different washing, but the same washing. That for us to present ourselves holy and acceptable before God, we've got to be washed. And most of us in this room this morning have been. And we need to ponder and think back about that rite that we went through to follow God's will for making ourselves acceptable before Him. As we go on to Leviticus chapter 9, everything that we've talked about for the last 7 days in this story, again, took time. Many animals were sacrificed. Morning to night, in and out, processions coming in doing this. Moses oversaw all of it. Moses did this to get the priesthood ready for them to watch the detail of attentiveness that was done to it. But in Leviticus chapter 9, it becomes Aaron's job. And it came to pass in verse 1 of chapter 9, on the 8th day that Moses called Aaron and his sons and the elders of Israel. And he said unto Aaron, take thee a young calf of a sin offering and a ram for a burnt offering and without blemish. And we're going to see him go through and offer for himself now. He's going to offer for himself. Not Moses offering it for him on his behalf, but now Aaron is imposed upon to, now you take care of yourself. Now, I'm stepping back, and this is your job now, as the priest of this nation, the high priest of this nation. And he does that in verses 1 through 7, and in he actually does it in 8 through 14, and then in 15 through 21, he goes and offers an offering for the people. And after all of this is done, and they take this blood and they go through, and there was, I mean, just the detail. We're just not going to get of sprinkling this blood seven times on the mercy seat, of wiping blood, maybe with a hyssop. We hear over and over again that they would dip the hyssop and they would wipe it on there. I'm not sure what they did it, but it was with care and time of each element and each furnishing of the tabernacle that all these things were done. After everything was done, and everything was done exactly according to God's will, and we reemphasize that in this congregation over and over and over again. And for any of you visitors that are here with us, just to say that for us to try to do things exactly right is not wrong. There's nothing to be ashamed of for doing that. The schoolmaster, the teacher of us, and what we're to learn from the Old Testament is to say, it's critical that you try to do things right. That's what they observed. And in verse 22 of chapter 9, and Aaron lifted up his hand toward the people and blessed them and came down from the offering of the sin offering and the burnt offering and the peace offerings. And Moses and Aaron went into the tabernacle of the congregation and came out and blessed the people. He couldn't bless the people until he had cleansed himself. And they come out of the tabernacle, and they bless the people, and the glory of the Lord appeared unto all the people, and there came a fire out from before the Lord, and consumed upon the altar the burnt offering and the fat, which when all the people saw, they shouted and fell on their face. And I don't know what this fire looked like, and I don't know exactly what occurred, but were offerings already going on for 7 days? I mean, there was offering continual from morning to night. There were fires burning. There were coals that were shoveled out, and the fire was attended to by priests, and this was all taken care of. But at this instance, after these offerings had been made, and they were roasting with that aroma that everybody was watching, and when Moses and Aaron went in and were not observed, could not be seen, were atoned for by themselves, when they came out, it was... I think of the King of England coming out and newly being coronated, or if you will, the Pope comes out on that and raises his hand, and everybody sees him. It's done. It's done. Here I am. I don't know if everybody shouted at that point when he walked out, but for God to impress upon his satisfaction, his pleasure with what was done, a fire came out and consumed that offering. And I gotta believe that was some image of a special fire, of a fire that's already burning, and something comes out and burns that up with a great fire that made everybody tremble and fall on their face, that it was a spectacle. And God saying, I approve. Here's my fire. This is not one that's been done by these men and a fire that's been stoked, but he came in and sent a fire from heaven, from God's presence that consumed these. And it scared the people. It humbled those people at the closing of this event. We're running out of time. We get on down to Leviticus chapter 10. We have Nadab and Abihu, and we don't know exactly what this was. It's a story that we're all really, really familiar with. But the point being is that either in their excitement over just being in awe of this fire coming out, in some way or another, they took their bowls. They would have had bowls, and they would have had coals in it. And where those coals were to be gathered from these holy sacrifices that had been issued under the altar of burnt offering. They would have had it, and they would have had another bowl or a cup with a handle on it, with incense on it, and they would sprinkle that incense over those coals, and the smoke would come up, and everyone would smell it. Whatever they did, either they used the wrong formulation of the incense, they got the fire from the wrong place, they offered the fire at the wrong time. Whatever they did, and we don't know, and we it doesn't deserve discussion because we just don't know. Whatever it was, God said they offered up strange fire, and at the end of verse 1, which He commanded them not. And we don't know what it was, but let me tell you, there's a lesson there for us that we don't have to find scriptures for us as we study and try to find the right way. We're not going to find a, don't you do that. Don't you have an organ in your assembly? Don't you do these specific things. We don't have to find, oh, don't do these specific things. There are laws and rules, and there are examples, apostolic examples, and we know how they worshiped in the first century church. And if we're looking for everything, it's evident here that all God says, I didn't tell you to do that. I never said anything about that. You've had 7 days of watching exactly how I had you do this, and you were to do it exactly this way, and you altered the rules. And on this time, at this soon, this quickly after the institution of the tabernacle, God made a point, and He consumed them with fire, and He killed Aaron's sons right there in His presence. And can you imagine? Take your children and watch them but die of fire at your feet. This was a statement by God to say, don't violate my law. And on top of that, He said, Aaron, don't stop what you're doing. This is not for you to mourn. They knew what they were doing. They violated it, and 2 million people are watching you right now. You don't get to grieve. You keep going about your services. You take care of this day and this event and what's got to happen. And He sent two other men in there, and I wish I could get their name right quick. Michelle and Elzaphan came in and hauled them without the camp. Don't even know what they did with them, where they took them, but they took them out, and Aaron and his sons and those attendants continued right on without the need to grieve, because it paled in significance to what they were doing. One other thing, there was a sacrifice that was offered in this peace offering, and they were to eat it. And in the closing verses of chapter 10, Moses gets on to Eleazar and Aaron and says, you didn't eat the sacrifice. You just saw your sons get killed, and now you're not eating the sacrifice? Are you crazy? And Aaron had the right answer, evidently, because it says in the closing verses of chapter 10 that Moses was satisfied with his answer. But the point being made was that Aaron said, we did not feel worthy. My sons, his brother defiled the tabernacle on the most holy day that we've ever had, and we didn't feel worthy to partake of this sacrifice. We couldn't eat. And Moses said, okay, I get that. I mean, it was awful what you went through. It was awful what you witnessed. And he saw his sons die at his feet. The point to that, moral of that story is that everything is important to God. And in our lesson, in our construction of our worship services, what we try to do is to do exactly what God says. And if we can learn that with the right attitude toward God and the right attitude one toward another, to just try to do the right thing. Make every effort to do the right thing. That doesn't make us haughty. It doesn't make us judgmental. It doesn't make us point fingers at people that are misled and doing the wrong thing. But to say that it's important to do the right thing, and we don't need to be ashamed of that. Appreciated this quarter. Appreciated the time that you've, your patience, the questions, and the things you've offered. The second bell has rung, or the first one, and I'm done. So, thank you very much.